Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the Material Podcast, episode number 463. I am your host this week, Florence Ion, and I am joined by my podcasting partner in crime, Andy Anatko. Hi, Andy.
Accent on the word crime. Actually, no, that's not quite correct, because we're doing things that are so fresh and so innovative that they're not actually crimes yet. Back in the 60s or back in the 70s, the first like bank computer programmer that realized that, wow, this the computer systems like round off like to the nearest like hundredth of a cent, but all those like 1/1000th of a cent go nowhere. What if all those thousands of a cent for every transaction went into my secret bank account? And then they discovered that, oh, well, he quickly made a couple $100,000. And unfortunately, they were like a kajillion different, like very petty larcenies. And it was difficult to. So they basically said, you know what? You deserve the win. You won't be able to do that anymore, but you deserve the win. So that's the sort of partner crime.
Isn't that the plot of Office Space?
Yes. also the plot of an old Cagney and Lacey episode. It's an old one. Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's like an old sort of thing that they use as a narrative driver of something you could do. Okay. All right. I love that. It's like heist movies.
Yeah.
but can you steal from your boss?
Well, pens. You're almost invited to steal pens. Like not cases of them, but like if you were to go home with a company pen in your pocket, you know, no one's asking.
I definitely made use of the company perks back in the day when I was in an office. God bless the supply closets. Speaking of supply closets, actually, this has nothing to do with supply closets, but I'm assuming Google I/O will have lots of supplies in closets that they are getting out right now and getting ready in Mountain View. So that is next week already. It's actually from today when we're doing the podcast. It's 5 days. Wait, is it really 5 days away? 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Okay, like 6 days.
Yeah.
Whew.
Thank God. I could handle 6 days from now. 5 days from now, I would have been absolutely hosed.
I mean,
all my chakras are definitely not in alignment for Google I/O. They're still in alignment for the recent iPad event. So I have to I have to nudge the red one and the blue one into new positions.
Okay.
It's a whole thing.
I like don't want to get it. No, we're going to. Okay. I just have to mention very quickly, because you just brought up the iPad event. Now, we were supposed to be talking about this on the podcast today, and we probably still will. But Google had announced that they are selling the Pixel tablet just as a standalone without the base. That was one of the news hits this week when they announced the Pixel 8a, which we're also going to be talking about. But I was wondering to myself as I was watching the iPad event unfold, I was just thinking, like, why does anybody want to buy a Pixel tablet?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. because I saw that they dropped the price on the cheapest iPad that they have right now. And that's just so compelling for like parents who are trying to buy a tablet for their kids. Like, yeah. I don't know. I want to buy my kid a Pixel tablet.
Yeah. And that's super disappointing because like, I think it was two Google I/Os before ago when part of the keynote was, oh, and we've been ignoring tablets for way too long. We're starting to optimize Android to be as good a tablet OS as it is a phone OS. And look at all the stuff as we're adding to it. And it's going to be a top priority. And really all they did was they made it work better for like foldable phones. Now that, okay, you can have a phone screen that can be much larger than a phone. Okay. But in terms of doing what an iPad can do, and I mean, one of the announcements from the iPad event was, they have the new version of the Magic Keyboard, which is their I don't know if they might drop the price, but at least a $300 really nice like keyboard case with really good keys on it. And this is the first edition of it where they actually gave it a row of hardware function keys, like Escape, F1, whatever. And if that doesn't show you like how committed they are to walk in the walk in terms of, well, actually, this is not exactly like a notebook, but you can, it is a legitimate productivity device. That's
how
they did that.
It's a Microsoft Surface. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of. But whereas Google is like, okay, we're kind of hoping that Samsung will continue to sort of prop us up there. And I was so looking forward to the Pixel tablet, because if it was like the first version of a future for Google on tablets, I would have been so into that, or at least I would have been curious. I don't know if anything could sway me from the iPad at this point, because they've got a 10-year head start, really. But at least it would have gotten me curious, and at least hopeful that there'd be an alternative to the iPad, but there just isn't.
Okay, well, I just have to make a slight confession that I felt very, and now this is not an Apple podcast, but listen, it did happen this week, okay? So it's on top of mind. And I have to just speak out loud and publicly about this, that I felt very pandered to with the scene on Bart and the Apple keynote. Felt very pandered. Bart doesn't even go to Cupertino. You'd have to hop on an extra bus to even go that way if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah. And you know, there are two scandals, or lowercase s scandals. Mm-hmm. One of them had to do with like that dramatic like aerial drone shot that wishes you out of the spaceship campus to track. Oh, look, this beautiful, lush, verdant green landscape, slice in this beautiful, magnificent BART train and trails and track cutting through it. Like, yeah, you deleted the huge like ring of highways that are basically the big walls of concrete that actually surround that vista. Yeah,
that's true. Although I will say. I will say BART is one of the pretty, can be a very pretty ride on some of the parts of the ride, of the lines. It's Wednesday. Tomorrow's my birthday, by the way. Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Florence. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
And a pinch.
He's not singing. Don't charge him. He was not
exactly
singing.
Again, that was I'm a communications professional. I know better than to sing the happy birthday song.
Correct. But I was just thinking about how it's been such a busy week already. Also, because by the way, Andy, I'm taking a swim class this month.
Nice.
And I forgot how tiring swimming is. Oh my God. And I had it this evening. My body right now is very tired. It hurts to go up the stairs.
is it just your swim class, or is it a swim class with a child?
No, it's a swim class for like adults who want to get reconditioned.
Great.
Yeah. It's at the community center, and we have like, I'm lucky to live in a suburb that has three pools. Like, it's awesome. So I was thinking might be a good idea to go get conditioned for the summer. If I'm going to be going out in the water in the bay, I should at least,
nice,
hone in my swimming skills and also use, my suburb's offerings. Plus I'm going with a friend, which is always fun.
Yeah.
A new friend, a newish friend. So, but it's made me very tired, especially because I was up early yesterday for an Apple event, and then, yeah, let me just tell you what we're going to talk about, because we're going to talk about it all. We're going to talk about the Pixel 8a. We're going to talk a little bit about the Pixel tablet. Yes. We're also going to talk about a little hack that came out this week. For those of you on the iPhone who wish you could use Circle to search and don't want to wait for Google to come up with it themselves, it's not a, it's not a direct replacement for the feature, but it definitely will help you on your journey to searching for things visually, as they say.
And the source of this is kind of interesting. We'll get into it, but that's why I wanted to talk about it, because I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, no, the source is great too. And also, remember last week we were talking about the DOJ? Well, this is the week the final arguments in the government's antitrust case against Google search. It wrapped up. We'll give you a little summary of what's going on. And then I'm really looking forward to our bonus episode. So for our members who are staying on to the very, very, very end for a little bit of extra If you're interested in becoming a member, by the way, go to relay.fm/membership to find out more, or go to relay.fm/material if you want to just enter in through our gates. We have gates as well that take you there. But so for members this week, we're going to have... This is Andy, an executive, the Google's executive productivity advisor, has a book on, quote, personal productivity and well-being, unquote.
That's worthy to discuss. I did not know that Google had an executive productivity advisor at all, and that she's been working there for 14 years. And we're not here to make fun of her job, what she's writing or anything like that, but I guess so. She has a new book out, and Google apparently thinks highly enough of that book to like be promoting it on the official Google blog with her and with a list of her five tips to, quote, up your productivity, lady. Sorry, could not resist that, and enjoy more you time. So we're going to talk about
this is great.
I saw a lot of these tips that I recognize in like my own workflow, and I kind of want to compare notes with you.
Yeah, no, there's actually some good tips. Darn. And here I thought I was going to get a chance to rail on a girl boss behind the paywall. Darn it, Andy. It's all good. Anyway, let's take a really quick break. And then when we get back, we have so much to discuss. So water break for everyone. And then we'll be back.
This episode of Material is brought to you by Computex 2024. It's one of the world's largest AIOT, that's Artificial Intelligence of Things, and startup shows, and it's happening in Taipei from June 4th to the 7th. Whether you're a seasoned industry professional or a passionate entrepreneur, Computex has something for everyone. Now, I'm not attending Computex, but oh boy, do I love a good big show. Because it's not just about the stuff that you came to the show to actually see, it's the stuff that you never ever knew existed that you would not have known about. If not for the fact that you were just simply wandering the aisles of a big major show. And not just that, but the people that you meet and just ideas that keep buzzing in your head. I've never gone to a really good show and not come back with a notebook full of thoughts I'd like to follow up on, things I'd like to learn more about. It's the brain needs some randomness, because if all it does is follow you along on a leash that you tug it along, it only goes places that you know exist. Whereas randomness, like going to a really, really nicely organized show, really, really moves you forward. And that's helps you be in some place you'd like to be in 5 years, as opposed to wondering exactly what you spent the last 5 years for. Well, at Computex 2024, you can discover cutting-edge technology from AI computing, advanced connectivity, and future mobility, explore the latest trends and innovations shaping the future of tech, and network with industry leaders at Innovex. Don't miss the chance to skyrocket your startup with Innovex, Computex's international startup hub. Innovex facilitates connections with manufacturing partners and global sales channels through competitions and presentations, ensuring heightened visibility and investor support. Plus, gain insights from thought leaders. Attend keynote speeches from the likes of AMD, Intel, Qualcomm, MediaTek, Supermicro, NXP, and Delta, as well as workshops led by industry experts, gaining valuable knowledge and insights. If you're ready to level up and expand your network, head on over to www.computextaipei.com.tw/material to register now and secure your spot at Computex 2024 from June 4th to the 7th. Or just click on the link we put in the show notes. Don't miss out. This is an incredible opportunity to be at the forefront of one of the world's largest AIoT and startup shows. Our thanks to Computex for sponsoring this show and all of Relay FM.
Well, 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 I didn't have aloe being a color that I wanted so badly, but this is the week that it happened. The Pixel 8a in four colors has officially come to knock out all the other budget mid-tier Android contenders. And I got to tell you, it's a really nice phone. I got to see it. Yep. it's a really nice phone, but it really, really makes me wonder why the heck I keep buying the regular Pixels every year if they're just coming out with this A series in the middle of it.
And in addition, that they're that it's the same CPU. It's not as though you're getting like last year's CPU or last year's whatever. It's like I can't. It's been a long. I can't actually. I'm correcting myself before I even say it. I don't think they've ever released a stinker of a A release.
The Pixel 4a for some reason kind of fell flat, and I think it's because that phone was just it just came in black.
I've owned a Pixel 1 and a Pixel 4a, and I love my Pixel 4a.
Yeah, no, the Pixel 4a was good. I just remember it being kind of lackluster because it didn't come in any like cool colors. So perhaps that's just my personal opinion about it. It was lackluster to me because they didn't put pretty pastel colors on it like they had done with the 3A. And following, of course, the last couple of rounds have been really pretty colors. And now this round, we have four colors to choose from. We have a black, a white, bay, which is the same blue as the Pixel 8a Pro. Excuse me, the Pixel 8 Pro, not the Pixel 8a Pro. There's no 8a Pro. The Pixel 8 Pro, excuse me, the color bay has been brought over to the 8a. There we go. Aloe. Then aloe. Aloe is a really pretty green. It's pearlescent. It's striking. It's really nice to have some saturated color in this day and age.
Oh, absolutely. That was, as a matter of fact, that was one of the complaints about the new iPads. That we've got dramatic new colors. It's like wow. It's like it's like the saturation scale, the saturation slider. They will not let anybody in engineering or design like let that saturation scale go above like 10%. So it's like wow. They're basically all different versions of gray. Like you've got a greenish gray, you've got a bluish gray, you've got a black gray, you've got a gray, and you've got a white gray. It's like no. How about some joy? How about some sunshine? And of course, the answer to that is well, just put a skin on the back and actually have something super colorful. But it's like, oh, but you're supposed to be the fun company. How come Google is giving us like super bright, wonderful, cheerful colors without having to slap a case over it?
Well, and plus you would think that they would do that with the iPad because the iPhone 15, the base model iPhone, they're all so colorful. That's their whole thing. And I have to say that, I don't know. Okay, it's not a base model iPhone. I don't think it is. Well, I take that back. Okay, let's talk about the specs first. Okay, so $500 phone. The rumors had said that this was going to be a $550 phone, $50 more, but thankfully that was not true. And it's good that it's not true because I think it would have been harder to sell this phone at $550 than at $500.
Yeah. It would have been scarily close to the Pixel 8 or to the or to last year's like Pixel 7s, which would be really, really competitive.
Exactly. And by the way, if you buy it now, if you go pre-order it, I believe it will start shipping next week from the Google Store. You can get a $100 store credit for a future purchase. So we do love. That's how I got my free Pixel Buds A series.
Me too.
May 14th is when this goes on sale. So the day of the Google I/O keynote. So it's very well timed. Same Tensor G3 processor, and it's basically going to get all the same AI features. And that was actually one of Google's really big pushes around this phone was that, hey, look, this is going to be the most affordable way that you can get access to Google's AI. And AI was very much at the forefront of the story of this phone when I was first introduced to it. And I have some feelings about it. But first, let's get through the specs of this. So it's actually not a smaller phone than the Pixel 8. It's actually like 0.1 inch or whatever bigger. It's a tiny sliver bigger. It's not really noticeable, like, to the eye. You can't tell at all. They're both the same, pretty much the same height and all that. But the reason I bring this up is because the Pixel 8a, the screen is glass versus the regular 8 and 8 Pro, they had POLED displays. So there's actually, you can feel when you push down on my Pixel 8, you can feel a little bit of flexibility. And I was trying to push down on the Pixel 8a when I had them in my hand, when I was going hands-on with them. And it definitely had a more solid feel to it. And I think that's why it's technically a tiny bit heftier, a tiny bit bigger, is because of that, the decision to use glass. This is the first Pixel A series with a 120 hertz display, but don't get too excited. It's a dynamic 120 hertz. Okay. It is not a consistent. If it were consistent, it would not be able to get the battery life that it is alleging, which is 24 hours without any energy saving options turned on or anything like that.
As it is, it has a, I think I read that it has a slightly larger battery than the 7A, and then that Google is promising pretty much the same sort of vague, 24 hours as the last year's model. So it's, they must be burning energy someplace else.
And here's the thing. They did really well with battery last year on the 7A. Like, the A series has consistently been the phone that you want to get if you want a Pixel phone with battery, to be honest. So I am curious. I think, one of the reasons they can claim that is because, again, they're doing a dynamic refresh rate. Let's see what else is going on here. So this screen actually does go up to 2000 nits. It's a very bright screen. It is an Actua display, which I'm still having like a weird time saying. It's Actua. It's also just got 8 gigabytes of RAM, which is exactly how much the Pixel 8 has. And I'm just getting really sick of paying money for 8 gigs of RAM. I really am.
It's a super bummer, especially considering how much Google is like relying on AI to deliver the super whiz bang features. And we already saw in the Pixel 8s and the Pixel 8 Pro that there are things that features that the Pixel 8 Pro can do that the Pixel 8 can't do. And it's all because, it seems to all be because the Pixel 8 Pro has 16 gigabytes and the Pixel 8 has only 8. And so
I have to correct you. It's 12 gigabytes on the 8 Pro.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The 16 gigabytes is on OnePlus's phones.
Oh, right. But still, like, and it's a reminder that really for all of your purchases going forward of hardware, like, if you have an option to get the model that has more system memory, definitely get the more system memory, because that's going to be the difference between this thing keeping up with all the OS updates for the full 7 years. And it kind of petering out at like 4 or 5. Google did promise 7 years of updates, good for them. But that doesn't necessarily mean that all the features of Android today plus 7 are going to be working on this device. We might see a bunch of things where once they finally do give us that long delayed feature where it will remove a chain link fence in a photo, give you a good look at your child playing softball. I haven't forgotten. We're gonna keep reminding you about that. You showed off this great feature at Google I/O like 5 years ago. Everybody oohed and awed, and we haven't even heard jack about it. So we are still gonna have to be keeping on your butt about that until you give us some damn answers. Okay, screed over. You'll find that, okay, so this great feature that I really, really, really wanted doesn't work on my phone, and it's only 2026, 2027. And maybe that's the reason why you'll hand down your perfectly good Pixel 8a because you decided that you need the Pixel 12a. No.
Well, and here's the other thing. I actually do notice a performance disparity between the Pixel 8. Like, I still have my 8 Pro review unit sitting here and running all the time because, I'm able to test these things. I bet if I were to put the 8 Pro, this 8 and A, do not like it. It is mixing me up. I don't like it. The Pixel 8 Pro, I bet if I were to put it side by side with the Pixel 8, I would notice a difference in AI processing, like how long. Sometimes it does take a while. Like, I'll sit there and wait for something to generate on the phone. And I'm realizing that's going to be the thing that is going to annoy me in this new era of technology, this new era of computing. You know, back in the day, it was, oh, well, your computer processor was really slow and you had to wait for it. Then it was the internet was really slow, so you had to wait for images and, you know, assets to load. And now it's, well, my phone doesn't have enough RAM to run the generative AI that I need to make a meme for this conversation I'm having with a friend.
Can I add a brief distraction? Because there's something really cool that I kind of discovered today about you get these nice little tiny little indications of how great progress has been made in technology. So I was doing some work at my local library, and for reasons like I needed a power outlet because my laptop was like down to like 8%. I forgot to plug it in last night or whatever, and I was kind of, first I was frustrated that it was so hard for me to find like tables that had like a power strip or a power outlet nearby. Then I realized that, oh, that's because almost every device that people have these days will run for like at least 8 hours on battery. So it's not, whereas recently as like 5 years ago, it was absolutely essential that if you're creating a space where people can come in from the public and sit down and work or do whatever with their computers, you had to make sure you had outlets everywhere. Now it's like, so long as there are some tables with outlets, you're good. Most people are going to be on their iPads. They don't really care. Most people are going to have a notebook with like 10 hours of battery life. It's not going to be quite so important. And I was like, okay, I'm slightly annoyed. I did find a table, no problem. But it was like, I'm slightly annoyed, but I, in exchange for a slight bit of annoyance, I got some insight into this tangible evidence of how society is adapting to better designed laptops. Yay.
8 hours out of a laptop, that must be nice.
oh, I forgot. I am a Mac user.
Okay, there he goes. Listen, my Dell may only get 6.5 hours off the charger, but who else could say that they have an NVIDIA GPU in there? Anyway,
true. And you can expand your own RAM and you can expand your own storage. So
This is very true. Let's talk about the camera on the 8A. So it's pretty much the same camera system. It's the exact same camera system, actually. Which is a bummer. As the 7A, sorry. Yes, last year. Which is a bummer only because, like, we don't want to be wasteful, right? You know, we really are, like, facing a climate crisis right now. So we don't want to be wasteful with components and silicon and glass and things of the nature. But I'm feeling like, is this what we're going to be looking forward to instead of a bump up in specifications? It's Google saying, well, you don't need the bump up in specifications. Our AI is going to do it for you. Because that's what I'm getting from this.
I think it's significant that the most significant thing about the A series, and this isn't the first year that Google has simply said, okay, everyone gets the same CPU. So all the features that are going to be backed by AI are probably going to be pretty much the same from machine to machine. And I think that their camera features are exactly sort of that. So, like, if I'm not mistaken, that means that the 8A has you have the Magic Editor, you have the Audio Magic Editor and Google Photos, all that really cool stuff. The stuff that, like, kind of differentiates your photos that you're posting on Instagram from Disney World versus, like, the rest of your family's photos from Disney World posted from their iPhones. Like, that's to me, that's the revenge of the green bubble. To say, well, I've got AI features and I don't have that dog in the background, like, you know, peeing on a bush in the family picture because I have an Android phone, blah, 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 blah.
They have an Android phone because they talk about it.
Well, because we have to, okay? Because the green bubble still stinks. I will hang my hat on that for as long as those green bubbles have a problem. But yeah, it's not the most when you're looking at. I imagine like them having the hood up on the Pixel 8, and looking at all the parts in there and thinking, okay, we need to find $300 that we can remove from this. What can we remove that will cause the least amount of damage to the experience? And when it comes to the whole experience, I mean, it'd be nice to have like a telephoto lens and a super wide angle lens. That would be nice, but you know that you're not going to get three lenses and three sensors on a budget to low mid-range phone. So that given how much hotness that Google puts into their image pipeline, it's not all that necessary. It seems like something that, again, when you're trying to make a big hit, a big savings in parts by getting and without really handicapping anything, then I think that that's a good choice to make.
You know, I really hope that the rumors that are saying that we're getting three different Pixel devices later this year, I'm kind of hoping they turn out to be true, because I would just like some differentiation of being a small phone person. I would just like something that's pro level, but small. Like, I want the iPhone 15 Pro, that size, with what it has in it. Although they don't have it is missing some things at the max, but Google could change that, right? Isn't that where AI is supposed to help out or something?
Maybe.
I don't know. But I do know that the Pixel 8a is probably going to entice a lot of people this summer. I think that there are more people who wait for this phone than like the regular Pixels. I hate to say it.
Yeah, I think it's a really good, I think a good thing that they actually have like an interim release, because everybody's on different like upgrade cycles for their own devices. It's nice that there's a brand new phone that's out at the 6 month mark instead of every 6 months rather than simply every year. I don't have any like marketing research behind this, but it's kind of nice to have the idea that, oh, I bought this fresh new phone that was just released this month, as opposed to having to wait like having to limp by with a phone that's bent at a jaunty 10 degree angle for another 6 months, waiting for the next generation of hardware to come out there. Like, maybe they did not plan on getting a Tensor 3 based phone like right now, but then unfortunately again they sat on that phone for the one time too many at exactly the wrong angle, and suddenly they're on the Google store thinking about what they're going to do with that $100 store credit.
Well, this feels like a good time to segue to what you could probably do with that $100 store credit, which is buy a Pixel tablet, put it toward a Pixel tablet without a dock.
If you don't have any friends who could talk you out of that and talk you into getting an iPad instead, that would be one thing you could do with it. Yes.
Well, and here's the thing, Andy, when the Pixel tablet, okay, so the Pixel tablet was announced a year ago now. Let's remember that. It came out last year at Google I/O. That's when they originally announced it. I think it started shipping in the summer. I'm just trying to recall all that because I know I was out part of last summer, and I don't really remember what happened, but
I think it was released in June. I want to say June. Might have been July, yes, but yeah.
Correct.
Definitely a J month.
It was $499, $500 last year as well. Now it's been docked down to $400 because it does not have the dock in the box. But I wonder if that dock is what was making this, you know, an enticing get for people. We'll see.
Yeah,
I guess.
I'm of two minds on this. On the one hand, I like the fact that they were basing their whole story of the Pixel tablet around the idea that we think that a tablet should be useful even when you're not actually using it as a tablet. So when you go home, when you place it on the charger, it actually becomes like a smart display, which was a really compelling way to put it. And I thought they messaged that very, very smartly. However, I also have to admit though, that did that cause a lot of people to think, oh, so this isn't a tablet? This is a smart speaker, but you can undock the screen and use. And again, if this was going to be how Google announces their renewed presence in the tablet market, that wasn't a great way to do it. I mean,
I agree.
It's compatible with a stylus, but didn't come with a stylus. I think you could attach a keyboard via Bluetooth, but it's not as though they even like worked with Logitech or somebody to say, hey, could you please, we will fund the R&D on this. Just make us a keyboard folio case for this thing. I think that got, and they also didn't do a good job of explaining, here's how we've done to Android to make it more like a tablet operating system, to make more of a productivity operating system when it's being run on a large screen. It's still just, you know, it's I really wish they could figure it out. They came out with a really interesting tablet concept like 5 or 6 years ago at I/O, but
they sold some to
developers. Interesting, like clip-on magnetic keyboard that turned into an easel. The size, I think, was quite correct. It was like large enough to give you some extra breathing room for your work, small enough that you wouldn't think twice about taking it with you. But this was still stuck with the limitations of a pre-Google has seen the light about tablets version of Android. So it was still just scaled up phone apps.
Yeah, you're right about that, Andy. This is basically them saying, hey, we're going to try this tablet thing again, and now you just buy it on its own. But that's not how you initially sold it to me in the first place. You sold it to me as a home controller, really. You sold it to me as a kitchen device, not a device that I sit on and... Sorry, not sit on. Not a device that I lay with and create, which is what you evoke in your mind when I'm sorry you think of the iPad.
Yeah.
And like, this is why marketing is the way that it is, right?
I
should ask people, I'm like, do you even know Google makes a tablet? And I'm sure they'll be like, no, let's be real. Sorry.
It's not just Apple's engineering that they're up against. They're also up against Apple's marketing. So it's not just that you can get them in Best Buy and everywhere else. It's that you walk into Best Buy and you know where the iPads are. Google just doesn't have that kind of recognition and accessibility. They are clearly they're trying to move some hardware here. Hopefully $100 is enough to get people to kind of move on this, but I'm starting to wonder if, like, there's going to be a Black Friday sale this year, like for half off, because they probably have lots and lots of these piled up. And I think that I would buy one for $150. That's the amount of money. Not, and I don't necessarily mean that to denigrate the Pixel tablet or Google's tablet initiative so much as, that's how much I would value having an additional tablet in my house that runs Android. In the interim, so many different devices have taken over that role.
Yeah, I'm trying. So what I was going to do next is read off all of these deals that they're trying to introduce to get you to convert the Pixel tablet. So actually, let's talk about them. Okay, so there is a new trade-in program. It lets you swap an iPad for a Pixel tablet and pay only the sales tax. You can trade in an iPad as old as the 2018 iPad 6 and get $400, up to $400 credit for one that's in the best condition. If it's not in the best condition, then you'll just get $200 for the trade-in. And Google's extending the offer to Samsung tablets as well, but the max trade-in value is $350, and the minimum drops to $100. I'm very curious if I wish they would give us the numbers on this. That's what's really frustrating, because I want to know if this worked for you or not. This is such an internal thing, I know, but I want to know if this is going to move units in any capacity.
Especially when, my first thought was, A, these are so long as you're not silly enough to say, oh, well, I've got an M1 based 12.9-inch iPad Pro, I'll happily trade it to you for a $400 Pixel tablet. No, but if you've got, like, a lot of people do have like an older device that's kind of just bopping around, and if that does get the price low enough that they'll take a flyer on it, okay, that's nice. But my thought has always been, I'd have to get out one of my old iPads to actually test it out. But I'm really thinking that what with the software library that's available for the iPad, a 2018 iPad 6 is probably more useful than a brand new right out of the box 2023 Pixel tablet.
Can you use the Apple Pencil on it?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking about, like in terms of where the value is.
Yeah, and meanwhile, as you said, like Apple has just like sort of trumpeted out, oh wow, we've got now look at everything the $350, $329 like iPad nothing can do, and it's now been thoroughly modernized. It's no longer the model that doesn't have has a clicky home button. It's no longer the one that uses the old Lightning port. Yikes. And if you go to Best Buy, you can get the last year's model of that for $250, which is just an insane deal. It actually got my like the worst part of my acquisitive nature like buzzing, thinking, "Ooh, I could buy that just as a book reader." Like, yes, you could, but you also already have a big. Yes, I know it's not as convenient as that tiny little iPad, but you already have a book reader and an iPad, so. That's money wasted, but still $249 for something as useful as a 2023 iPad. That's pretty damn hot. And that, given that that's pretty much what it would cost with any sort of reasonable trade-in, I think. Yeah, it's a hard sell.
It is a hard sell. It's a hard sell. Pixel 8a, easy sell. The Pixel tablet, a hard one.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so we're going to take a break in just a moment, but I really... I'm kind of glad, on the side note, I'm kind of glad we're not doing a Google I.O. preview episode. Because I just kind of don't want to talk about it right now. I want to just wait and see what it is. I want to be surprised. I want to have no expectations.
That's you know, I haven't done as much speaking as I used to like before COVID, but that was my ideal situation. I want people to have no expectations. I can work with that. And I think that if I were Sundar Pichai, and if I were the team that's putting together the Google I.O. keynote, I'm hoping that people come in with no expectations whatsoever.
Exactly. I'm just going to be there for the ride. Lord knows what that ride will be, and Lord knows what kind of lunches that ride will entail. But I will have boots on the ground for you next week, as promised. So stay tuned for that. Let's take a quick little break. And then when we get back, a hack and the Department of Justice. Well, this was a fun little thing to wake up to today. A tip from Google Lens's own design manager about how to use Apple shortcuts to basically hack your way to circle to search. Now, it's not exactly, you know, it's not an apples to apples trade-off here. So you're not going to be able to do the, you know, the dynamic fluidity of being able to circle things and highlight text with your finger and just like free flow all over the interface. But you will, it will teach you a little bit about Apple shortcuts, which are kind of magical. They're honestly overwhelming to me, which is why I haven't reported on them as much as I would like to. But I know that they are very popular, that people love to share the shortcuts they make. And so this was one of those instances where Google Lens design manager pasted the iCloud link to the shortcut and said, "Hey, fans, have at it. Go, you know, go get this installed." So I did that. So I went and I got it installed and I bound it to an accessibility feature. So when I triple tap the back of the iPhone 15 Pro Max, when I triple tap 1, 2, 3, there we go. It takes a screenshot of what you're looking at and then opens up, the Google search app. Now, it doesn't work perfectly every time. Okay.
Yeah.
It if you're viewing content on TikTok, let's say, it will work there because you have this full screen video situation going on. And I guess for some reason, Google search, I don't know, for some reason, the shortcut works in that instance. But like, I just did it from the home screen and it was completely confused as to what to show me on Google search. So, I mean,
I thought, yeah, what I liked about this was that, you know, when Circle to Search first came out, my reaction was, I mean, I thought, oh, okay, well, that's really cool. That's a nice little way to like a nice enhancement to Google Lens. I use Google Lens all the time just by swiping up on the bottom of the screen and to reveal the screen and then say, hey, apply Google Lens to things like that, then selecting as like you said. And thought, okay, that's a very intuitive way to sort of next generation your way through that. I didn't think that it was going to turn out to be like so beloved and such a cornerstone of the Android team's pride and outreach to the rest of the world of how inventive they are, that like they're this close to getting their own like fiberglass statue in the sculpture garden in Mountain View, like, because they've been promoting Circle to Search so frequently since then. And so I thought it was really, really interesting and kind of cool that the design manager for Google Lens decides to say, oh, well, I know iPhone people, look, I don't, stop direct messaging me. Really, honestly, there's no way that we can do Circle to Search directly on your iPhones. I know you're begging us for it. I know that that's the reason why you want to switch to Android. Until you buy your new Android phone, however, here's a stopgap. It's not as good. It can't possibly be as good as what we've built right into Android with all of our smarts and such. But at least it'll give you a little bit of a taste. It'll let you wet your beak for the kind of exciting, dynamic experiences you've got waiting for you over there amongst the green bubble lands. I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, okay, so the design manager, by the way, the design manager, their name was Minsang Choi, and they pasted this link on X, formerly known as Twitter. Boo. But the reason I was really attracted to this whole interaction is because this, to me, is it resembling of like old Google, the tech company who really was just like a buddy in California. It's kind of how I felt about this interaction. You know what I mean? Like, it just felt, it was like, hey, I know, you know, it wasn't competitive. It wasn't about being competitive, you know, iPhone versus Android. It was like, hey, here's like a way to, I don't know. I liked the interactivity of it. I don't know.
Yeah. It was just the gentle way of saying, oh, well, no, this is an exclusive feature. No, you can't get anything like that. Whereas here is like somebody of prominence inside Google saying, you know, this is really cool. It's really nice. Here's a way you can get something like that going on your iPhone. Because they know that they're not going to sway somebody to drop an iPhone and switch to Android because of Circle to Search. But yeah, it's cool that it's the kind of company that let this sort of thing go out. I absolutely cannot imagine Apple ever like saying, okay, well, you know, I know that you're probably, if you like a continuity camera feature, there's actually a way you could do that similarly on Android and you can do it like this. Like, no, I don't think Apple would ever, if an engineer ever like tweeted like that or Blue Sky, something like that, there would be a conference call the next day. They wouldn't get fired. They wouldn't get reprimanded, but there would be a conference call about about how you're supposed to use social media if as an employee of Apple.
That's a scary call to get. I guess any call when you work at Apple from Apple is a scary call to get. I'd be very scared. But I'm intimidated by big bosses. So what can I say? So that was okay. So that's a nice little thing. We'll paste the links for you with the how to's. I wrote about it on Gizmodo. 9to5 Google wrote a how to. The links will be there for you in the show notes if you are curious. You want to go try this out with your iPhone. It definitely got me curious about what other Google things I could unlock using Apple Shortcuts, but yeah. Right now, all I'm thinking about is Google I.O. next week. So that's all we got on the mind. Speaking of having just Google on the mind, so did the Department of Justice all this time until last week's closing arguments.
Closing arguments, yeah. The closing arguments. You know, in a rom-com, this would be the point when someone in the jury like leaps up and say, "Why don't you just admit that you love each other? you're parrying all this passion you've got from each other into anger, into litigation. Just kiss each other for God's sakes. We're sick and tired of it." Well, no, okay. So the arguments in court ended last week on Friday, and so they're worth talking about because there was final arguments on both sides and a revitalized rhubarb. And you know how much I like a good rhubarb. So the closing arguments from the Department of Justice, it was 2 days long, and I'm relying on like legal experts who summarize these and what was said and wrote about it, because every time I try to read like these summary arguments, anything like that, I don't understand what they're saying. I don't understand the importance of what they're saying. So a lot of this is coming from Ars Technica's coverage and a couple other people's coverage. But anyway, so the Department of Justice and the state's attorneys general who brought the suit, they've summarized their case by basically reminding the court of all the deals that Google signed with phone makers that would lock in Google search as their default search engine, like on the iPhone, on Samsung, on all these other makers. We learned about all the specifics about how Google's terms would tie access to Google's crown jewels. Like if you want your phone to have access to the Google Play Store, to YouTube, to Maps, all that cool stuff, you are going to have to use Google Search as your exclusive search engine. And so they're saying, "Wow, Jacques, that's pretty much it. Look, as because of that, they established a hurdle that was impossible for any competitors like Bing to climb in order to get it." There was a lot of really good testimony over the course of this trial, including Microsoft essentially saying that we would have loved to have done that. Even us, Microsoft, could not have put enough money into the pot to make an offer to Apple to get them to switch to Bing as the default search engine. And okay, that's a good argument. The department, one really good quote, Kenneth Dintzer, who's an attorney for the Department of Justice doing the summation, did a callback to the Department of Justice's last big antitrust win against tech, which is, of course, Microsoft. He claimed that Microsoft's pattern of behavior in trying to guarantee the dominance of Internet Explorer fit the facts of the case against Google, quote, like a glove. It might have been better if he had done that in the Ace Ventura voice, like a glove. As it was, comparing it to like something fitting like a glove, just like what, a week after O.J. Simpson died, that was a curious choice. All I'm saying is that it was an interesting choice. Had it been discussed with more members of the team, maybe there was some argument that was a distracting sort of simile to make. So then Google's attorney opened the door for Google's attorney to fire back with, "I don't know what kind of gloves Mr. Dintzer wears." So he dismissed the comparison to Microsoft, saying that, well, the difference here is that Internet Explorer was an inferior browser and that Microsoft was trying to basically force everybody to use an inferior product, whereas Google was reiterating all the testimony from Apple and Samsung and every other handset maker that the companies chose Google Search as a default search engine because it was hands down the best performing search engine. And it was what like all their users would expect. Apple, for instance, was, through their internal documents and through testimony, were saying that, look, you know, nothing comes close to Google Search to perform that function. It's what all of our users would expect us to use for that kind of a function. And if we gave them options, they wouldn't even recognize what the options to Google Search are. And we just don't want to clutter up the setup process by asking a question like that when we know everybody's going to choose Google Search. And of course, Apple is a little bit biased because, as we also found out over the course of this trial, they're getting like $20 billion because like their cut of Google Search revenue is substantial. Every time that Apple has their quarterly earnings call. They talk about, oh, and our services division is making leaps and bounds and making a big contribution. They don't mention that, yeah, a huge chunk of your services are that fee, that check that you deposit from Google each and every year. So, yeah, so that's the back and forth that came down there. However, now here's on to the rhubarb. Google had a policy of deleting internal messages that they say was a standard policy. It had nothing to do with like they're wanting to like cover up evidence that the Department of Justice would have liked to get their hands on. That came up in February of last year, but the Department of Justice is not letting Google off the hook. So because lots and lots and lots, thousands and thousands of internal messages were deleted by Google before and during the government's investigation, Google was not therefore able to provide the Department of Justice with all of the internal company chats that they requested. So Google used to have a policy where their servers would destroy all chats with after 24 hours. Also, employees were officially encouraged to turn chat history off whenever they discussed sensitive subjects. And there was also kind of a style guide to say, don't use this word, use this word instead. Something that really sounds as though they're trying to make something. Yeah, the Department of Justice thought that was super fishy last year. They still think it's super fishy. Google eventually changed the policy, but that policy continued to be in effect even after the company knew that a federal investigation was underway and that they were obligated to retain those records. As a matter of fact, so they didn't start preserving employees' chats until the very, very week in February of last year when the Department of Justice filed a motion with the court to sanction Google over it. At the time, the Department of Justice were saying, I'm quoting here, Google's daily destruction of written records prejudiced the United States by depriving it of a rich source of candid discussions between Google's executives, including likely trial witnesses. So the kind of like the last thing that they talked about in court last week before everybody went home was the Department of Justice petitioning the judge to correct all this. So they're asking the judge to, and again, this is where legal stuff that I'm not really qualified to explain. So I'm going to quote, conclude that communicating with history off, here's referring to internal chats in which they turned off chat history, shows anti-competitive intent to hide information because they knew they were violating antitrust law. So the Department of Justice is asking the court to do a few things. We don't want Google to we want the destruction of this evidence to be a constant presence in how this case is adjudicated and considered. So they're asking the court to presume that the deleted chats would have been bad for Google's defense, that Google knew that it was doing something sketchy when they maintained those policies, and that they did all of this to help maintain their monopoly. Here's the big piece of legalese that I tried very hard to understand, and which turned into just, why don't I just cut and paste this from Ars Technica's coverage? Quote, the government also wants a, quote, prohibition on argument by Google that the absence of evidence is evidence of adverse interference, unquote, which would stop Google from arguing that the Department of Justice is just assuming the deleted chats are unfavorable to Google. Okay. Not going to comment on that because, again, I don't fully understand it. I think it seems to say that they don't want Google to be able to say, like in an appeal, that, oh, well, you need to throw this out because the Department of Justice presented arguments that created an assumption that they didn't prove. So they want to basically say, look, no, no, no. Look, jerkwads, you guys deleted that stuff, okay? That you've got a smoking gun in your hands. We don't have to assume you did that just because you needed to free up some space on your servers because you were downloading some music from Spotify later on. That was sketchy as hell. So the judge hasn't done anything with this motion just yet, but he did say that, quote, Google's document retention policy leaves a lot to be desired, unquote. And he also seemed skeptical that Google really, as they said, considered that policy to be a best practice. So, but everyone gets to go home. Everybody gets to stop being sick of the sound of each other's voices. So we probably won't hear a ruling on the case until next year, but this isn't as it's going to be interesting to find out what this ruling is, because I do think that, like, whatever else Google was involved with, you can't challenge the conclusion that Google search really is awesome, is what they, it's mm-hmm. what they've been doing well, since day.
Yeah.
Well, especially compared to all the other alternatives out there. And they've been doing this since day one. They've been investing in search well before that was even remotely profitable. I mean, if you really want to see damage being done, wait until the DOJ's antitrust case on their ad business comes in. I don't know how Google's going to wriggle out of that one, but I think they're going to wriggle out of this one.
Which is why they're trying to find other ways to wriggle money out of us.
Yes. Please buy a tablet. We're going to need hardware certain revenue in a couple of years.
Please buy a tablet.
Or at least go to the Google store.
Really
buy one of those.
Feel like that.
Buy one of those vinyl Android dolls. Aren't they adorable? Come on.
Yeah, it's so wild. It's so wild. Well, that's about... Thank you, Andy, by the way, for running us through all of that. Bless you.
That's a lot of PDFs I've had to read over the past 2 years.
Yeah. And now we're going to end the episode because it was very tiring to get through all that.
Yes.
So thank you.
Also, we need to marshal our energy for Google I/O next week. We will be recording one day late. To basically get, because both of us are going to be doing a lot of Google I/O related work and we're going to need an extra day. So anticipate that.
Bear with us.
Bear with us. Have pity. Well, not pity, but maybe, at least don't be angry with us.
Maybe I'll take some audio from Boots on the Ground.
Ooh.
I should. I can play how loud and awful the screeching music is because I know they're probably going to do an AI DJ again.
We could only hope.
Well, oh God, I don't, please. I'm bringing earplugs. I want to thank our editor, Jim, for making us sound great every single week here on the Material Podcast. If you're interested in supporting our show, supporting us, supporting the network, you can go to relay.fm/material to find out how to become a member of this wonderful podcast network. And that membership gets you lots of perks, including access to our bonus content, which is coming up next, if you're a member. And if you're not, head over again to the website, check that out. That is it for us this week. I'm very tired. You know where you can find all my stuff. Andy, where would you like to tell folks to read you this week?
As usual, I spell my last name on Blue Sky and Instagram and all those other fun places, and you'll find little snippets. Hopefully we'll have something bigger ready for you by the end of the month.
Yay. I guess you're not doing radio this week?
Not this week, but you can see I was on last week. You can check that out at wgbhnews.org. Actually, that was actually at the wonderful GBH studios at the Boston Public Library. So you can actually also watch me at their YouTube channel is also WGBH News.
And their cookies, by the way, look delicious. They have pictures of them on the internet. They look very delicious. Okay. Well, I guess that's it, Andy. Let's wrap this up. Thank you so much again for listening, everyone. That's it for this week. We hope you'll be with us again next week. And until then, we hope you have a happy, healthy, and safe 7 days. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.